Okay, right, so it is Parshat Mishpatim this week, and it is also Parshat Shkalim. That means that an extra Torah scroll is taken out, and we read an extra section which is about people giving a half a shekel. So it's the beginning of Parshat Kitissa, which is three parshiot long. So this seder is Mishpatim, then comes Truma, then Tetzaveh, and then Kitissa. So the beginning of that seder is Vayidaber Hashem. We've got that in the text from the Torah. So Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe le'mor, Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Ki tisa et rosh b'nei Yisrael. Now, this is really meaning when you count the heads of the Jewish people. But the word tisa actually means, what does it mean?
Carry.
Carry, that's right, or lift up.
Lift up.
When you lift up the heads of the b'nei Yisrael, of the Jewish people, lifkudehem, by their numbers, V'natnu ish kofe nafsho l'Hashem, and each man, each person should give an atonement of his soul to God, bifkodotam, when you count them, v'lo yeh bahem negef, bifkodotam, and there shouldn't be any affliction when you count them. The idea that counting is has a problematic quality. So we don't count people.
Yeah, it's really weird that.
Is that Ein Hara?
Yeah, well, it's Ein Hara, it's many different images, some of which we might come across in this discourse. So we don't count people. I mean, that's here in this biblical source, and then also with King David, counting the Jewish people. So counting is a problem.
Mm. Is that so, become ingrained in tradition as a
what?
Not counting?
Well, yeah, I mean, here it is in the Torah. So instead of counting,
you say not one, not two. Not three.
Well, what they did was each one gave a half shekel. Zeyitnu, look at verse 13. This is what they should give. Kol ha'over al hapikudim, each one who is passing over the numbers, in other words, included in the numbers. The discourse mentions that the Talmud Yerushalmi says, we're counting all the people who went through, who went over the Red Sea, the sea that split. So kol ha'over, all those who went over, went through. So all those who go over the numbers, machatzit ha'shekel, they should each give a half shekel. And then it tells us about the half shekel. And obviously, if they each give a half shekel, then you'll be able to count the shekalim, and you'll know how many people there are altogether. So that's how we get to the number of 600,000 Jews who were there, approximately, who were there with Moshe. So that's the beginning, that's the entrance. And what we're going to explore in the discourse is the concept of counting and some related concepts, as we will discover together. Yo yom ba yam ba yom bo ya yam ba yam ba bo yam ba ba ya yam ba yom ba bo Right. Okay, so let's have a look at the discourse. The discourse was said in 1966, and the Shabbat was the same as the Shabbat this week. So it was Mishpatim and Parshat Shkalim, and it was the day of blessing the new moon, and it was Erev Rosh Chodesh, like our coming Shabbat. Ki tisait rosh b'nei Yisrael. When you count the heads of the Jewish people. Now, umevi kvod kedushat admor hatzemach tzedek. Now, the third Lubavitcher Rebbe was called the Tzemach Tzedek. That was the name of a set of books that he wrote of rabbinic responsa, and the name of the set is Tzemach Tzedek, and he's called that. His actual personal name was Menachem Mendel. Now, Shahashana Hishnat Hamea Listalkut Hilula Shelo. 1966 was the hundredth century since this Tzemach Tzedek had passed away. Now he said, "B'maimer,
Histalkut is he disappeared.
Histalkut. Well,
why Histalkut Hilula?
Because the time of a Yahrzeit is, in a sense, Hilula literally means wedding. And it's the soul, it's a happy thing. So it's the soul returning to spiritual realms. Okay. So for the soul, it's a happy thing. For other people, it's very unhappy. But for the soul, it's something very beautiful. Okay. That's why every year on the Azkara, on the Yahrzeit, the soul rises even higher. So that's the paradox of life.
Mm.
That what is happy for one is grief for another. So he said, in a discourse which began this way, you see, it's the opening words of a discourse are something very significant. Which verse is like the window? The verse, the biblical verse, is a kind of a window into a spiritual realm.
Mm.
And the discourse begins with that, and all the different Chabad discourses, which begin with the same verse, they all have an affinity together. They may talk about different things, emphasize different concepts, they may each one be saying something unique, but the fact that they begin in the same way gives them a certain quality.
I went to Jerusalem the Golden on Sunday. You can actually get lots of them in English, you know.
Lots of the discourses.
Hasidic discourses in English, yeah.
So did you get
not on money, but I got Fassi Legani the previous week.
Okay, well, that's wonderful. So this was a discourse, you see, here we're talking about the 1960s, that there were various collections of Chabad manuscripts in Europe, which were slowly being rescued after the Holocaust. So there was a set of books that came from Europe to America, and so this volume was among them, and so that's why it says shenimtza bebichul sheyatza lachorana migalut legeula. It's in a book in a collection which recently was redeemed. The hine amru rabotenu zichronam livracha. The sages said, ma chitim halalu. Now here's an interesting image. Just as wheat, when you're going to sow wheat, you count them. Now that's an interesting image. You count the grains of wheat or the amount of wheat that you sow. And when you reap, and then you put them into the granary, and then you take them from the granary, nichnasin b'minyan. They come into your home also by number. So the wheat, it's numbered. I mean, I would have thought you number them in
bunches.
In bunch, that's right, or bags, or somehow or other. But the Midrash describes it that the wheat is as if you've counted each grain. Kach, now the parallel that it draws, that's easier to understand. Kach kashiyadu Yisrael Mitzrayim. Similarly, when the Jewish people went down to Egypt, Yardu b'minyan, they went down with a number. In other words, they were numbered. God counted how many children and grandchildren of Jacob went down to Egypt, and it was 70 altogether. Ukushalu alu b'minyan, and when they came out of Egypt, they were also counted. So this idea of counting, V'hainu, that means shahaminyan, that the idea of counting, morel chashivut hadavar, indicates the importance of something. Shemitzad chashivuto, because of its importance, moninoto, it's counted. Shelachein hinedavka, and therefore it is specifically hachitim, wheat, yotzim b'minyan, are planted with a number and reaped with a number. Unlike v'lo ateven akash v'hamotz, unlike straw or stubble and the other kind of the husks, hide of it. The husks of the wheat, they aren't counted, but the actual wheat grains are. All right. The she'inam nechshavim leklum, because straw and stubble aren't considered important, whereas the wheat is, and so we count it. So in the same way, the Jewish people are counted when they go into Egypt, when they come out. Now, so this is like a simple kind of concept. Footnote 3 says where it's from. It's actually from Shir HaShirim Rabbah.
Oh, my favourite. Brilliant.
Right. So that's Midrash Rabbah on Song of Songs. And now we launch into an exploration of the concept of number and related concepts. And that is from this discourse by the Tzemach Tzedek, the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, and now this is in paragraph 2. Umakdim levaya. Now the Tzemach Tzedek begins explaining. Shebeshoresh sefer, samach pei resh. When we look at the root, samach pei resh, you see most Hebrew words have got a triliteral root, a root which is made of three letters. And those three letters can become a noun or a verb or different kinds of verb. So with this root, which is the root of the concept of mispar, number, yesh dalet shorashim, there are four further aspects. It calls them shorashim, there's four dimensions, as it were, to this root, samach peiresh. Ha'alef, the first one is milishon mispar, the word number, counting. Kumo usafachtem lachem, like we say in between Pesach and Shavuot, you should count the days of the Omer. So that's usafachtem, that's one meaning of the letters samach peresh, counting. Habet, the second one, what's the second one? Can anyone see?
Telling a story, the saper.
Well, the saper and what's sefer?
A book.
Yes, lishon sefer. So exactly the same letters. It's a book. So there's counting and there's a book. Kumos ze sefer toldot hadam, as the Torah says, this is the book of the generations of man. Agimel, the third one is what David just said, milishon sipur v'hagadah, telling a story. So there's actually having a book is one thing, and telling a story is another. And counting is a third. Kamo leman tesaper b'oznei bincha, the Torah says about the going out of Egypt, that in the future you'll be able to tell the ears of your children about the going out of Egypt. And he uses this word, the saper. V'hadalet, and the fourth, what's the fourth meaning of the root samach pei resh? It relates to Shmuel.
Sofer, as in a scribe.
Relates to me.
Oh, yeah, relates to you. Look at verse 19. Look at line 19.
Sapphire.
Sapphire. Oh, wow. Is that a Hebrew word then? Sapphire.
Yes.
Sapphire. Is it really? Is it a Hebrew word?
Yeah, sapphire is English. But
the origin is Hebrew.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, I mean, they're probably similar words in other languages. But there we have four dimensions of this root. One is number, and it's all the same root. One is number, one is book, one is story, and the other one is a sapphire. Kamosha Katov, and he brings a verse. For each one of them, he brings a verse. Kamare Evan Sapir. They had a vision, a divine, a vision of the divine, and there was something like the looking like a sapphire stone, so a sapphire hallway. Vazel Inyan. Now this. Yeah, we're now going to jump. Yeah, right. Okay, so put your seatbelt on. Into line 20. Vazel Inyan Eses Svirot. These are the 10 Svirot, the 10 divine emanations. Shenikraot Kain, and they're called Svirot, Al Shem Sheyesh Bahem Kol Arba Bchinot Hanal. Because they've got all these four qualities. In the Svirot, we have number, book, telling, and the brightness of Sapphire. The innate. Now he's going to explain it. We're going to begin with the Sapphire. Svirot heim leshon evan sapir. The very word svira relates to the word for sapphire. Shehu leshon bihirut, which indicates brightness. The svirot are bright. Now the svirot in some way are attributes. They are communicating the divine. Now, the whole world, in a sense, is a communication of the divine, because God created the whole world, the whole universe. And so really everything should communicate the divine. But the problem is it doesn't. It hides it. It conceals it. And we have the basic concept that ha'olam, which is the word for world or universe, has the same letters as the word he'elem, concealment.
Now, what's it called?
Ha'olam.
Ha'olam, yeah, the same.
Ha'olam is the same as concealment. You see, it's just the hey, ayin, lamed, mem. Now, depending on the pointing, you can either point, call it ha'olam or he'elem.
Or alum.
Yeah, there are many other. Yeah. Ne'elam, something that's disappeared.
Wow, that's good.
So the world conceals godliness, but the Sfirot are an aspect of a manifestation of the divine which shine. They reveal godliness. Shehu leshon bihirut, they are the word Evan Sapir in the case of the Sfirot indicates something shining, radiating. She'inan mastirot, over the page, they do not conceal ala or hamalubash behem, the radiance which is enclosed in them. Within the sfirot, which are conceived as a kind of a vessel, and several vessels, and inside each vessel there is radiance, and the vessels do not hide the radiance. Elehem kelim, they are vessels, she'al yadam, through which Mitgale ha'or, the radiance can be revealed. And then he explains in the brackets that God unites with the radiance in the vessel, and God also unites with the actual vessel. So the vessel itself has a divine quality. So we're now up to line 4. V'zeh gamash ha-sfirot u'melshon sipur v'hagada. That relates to the next meaning, that the word sfirot, it connects with telling, a story, relating something. Kamo ha-shamayim mesaprim, like the heavens tell. Ha-shamayim mesaprim kabod keil. The heavens tell the glory of God. So if you look at the heavens, the sun, the moon, the stars, they are expressing, they are telling the glory of Hashem. Miss out the brackets. O Kumosha Katuv, ki eresha mecha, when I see your heavens. There are a number of verses throughout Tanakh that talk about a person being inspired when he or she looks up at the night sky or at the heavens and is inspired with a sense of godliness. Lift up to the heavens, your eyes, and see who created these. So the heavens express godliness. In fact, everything expresses godliness. A leaf, a crystal, whatever we look at expresses godliness if we are able to look at it in that way. And that particularly relates to the 10 Sfirot. Kevan, since Shalidei Eses Sfirot, through the 10 Sfirot, Nimshach Gilui Ahelem, is a revelation from the concealment, Shel Ein Sof Baruch Hu, of the infinite, may he be blessed. So the infinite is normally hidden, but through the Sfirot, this hiddenness is transformed into revelation. Okay, let's miss the brackets. Eile shitre, now, line 13. Eile shitrila, but first. Harizeh be'ofen da'ant hu chakim v'lo b'chochma yediyah. It says in the Zohar, you are wise, God, but not in a known chochma, not in a known wisdom. So the revelation of God is in a way which is beyond knowledge, beyond our understanding. Va'achakach, and after that, nimshach mizeh, we go to a lower level. Gam mashu b'yediyat atzmo, that through the fact that God knows himself, so to speak, yodea kol nivraim, he knows all existing things, until we have lower and lower the expression of godliness, ve'ad shemizeh nimshach gam inyan ha'chokhmah lemata, till we come right down to the concept of wisdom below. Ve'inyan ha'sfirot, and the idea of the sfirot, hu gam l'shon misvah, also relates to the word number. Shaharei ha'sfirot heim b'misvah esa, dafka. The sfirot have the number 10. Now that's something which is emphasized in early texts about the Sfirot, like the Book of Creation. It says, Eser velo tesha, 10 and not 9. Eser velo achadasa, 10 and not 11. And finally, Usfirot hu gam eleshon sefer. The Sfirot relate to the word book. Now, in the Book of Creation, it says, Shezeo, and here is a quote, Shebishlosha svarim bara hakadosh baruch hu olamo. With three books, God created his world. Shehem Chochma, wisdom, Bina, understanding, Da'at, knowledge. Those are the three books with which God created the world. Now you might remember in the Bar Mitzvah Maimah, in the discourse of the Bar Mitzvah, it talks about Sefer, Sippur, it speaks about something relating to this as well, Sefer, Sofer, and Sippur. So this the different ways, the different permutations or pointing of the root Samach Pei Resh, and how it comes to mean different things. But here we have these four concepts, which are the number, the telling, the number, the book, the telling, and the sapphire, and all of those relate to the Sfirot. Now last week, the discourse that we were studying talks about the way that at the giving of the Torah, a barrier between the spiritual realm and the physical realm was removed. And the effect of the removal of that barrier is that the human mind is able to appreciate a divine concept. So this sort of Kabbalistic concept that in the root, Samach Pei Resh, there are four aspects of meaning, and that each of those is expressed in the Sfirot, which is a kind of, you know, might seem rather abstract spiritual connection. But this is actually something flowing from the infinite wisdom of the Ein Sof, communicated through the Book of Creation, the Zohar, other teachings, coming to us through this discourse, said in 1966, and made available to us now so that we're able to study it together. And what is happening is that a divine concept is entering our mind. And the question is what we're going to make of this divine concept and how we're able to utilize it. So that's what's taking place. You know, there's something from
beyond. So the form is there and now it can penetrate.
Yes, yes. Or the channel. Yeah. The door is open. The door is open for something infinite and spiritual.
So what... Sorry, I wasn't here. What was the initiation that allowed that opening? What intercepted the ignorance?
Well, that is really the divine plan for the world.
Okay.
And there had been a time of concealment due to the sin in the Garden of Eden. But the actual plan for the world is that there should be a physical world and physical human beings. And that we should be able to appreciate the divine, and our physical lives should correspond to divine teachings. That is why the mitzvot, the commandments, were given at the giving of the Torah. And those commandments sanctify our physical lives.
Mm.
What we should eat, how we should behave, who we should marry, what we should do, what we shouldn't do. So all of that is something that becomes part of a divine, an interaction with God. So
that's what cleared the way from what blocked the view into...
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that there had been a mechitza, there had been a barrier in existence, and then this barrier is broken through.
Through... giving the form, the rules.
Well, it's God doing something which breaks, which breaks through the barrier. He comes towards us and he lifts us up, like God was revealed on Mount Sinai, and then Moshe went up Mount Sinai. So these were two different steps in this meeting point. So now, I mean, this discourse was said in a different year. But I'm just taking the theme that following on that idea, we're then able, hopefully, to appreciate these concepts and the fact that the concept is able to come into our mind and we're able to think about it, we're able to be taught, is something which is very rich and very beautiful. All right. So now we go on to the next page, which is page Zayin. Umamshich levayer, and in this discourse of the Tzemach Tzedek, it continues explaining, and he quotes a particular verse. Shezeu ma shekatuv, that's what it says in a verse. Hamotzi b'mispar tzva'am. God takes out by number all the hosts of heaven.
All the stars.
Yeah. All the stars.
147, I think it is.
Right.
Psalm 147. God takes out.
Well, this, what it's quoting here, is a verse in Isaiah. Isaiah 40:26. But there are similar verses elsewhere. So God brings out the stars by their number. Hainu, shesibat hitchalkut v'ribui hanivraim. Now, here's a fascinating idea. The world is a world full of variety and multiplicity. On the other hand, God is ultimate unity and oneness. How is it that in the process of creation, moving from God to the universe, we have from the oneness, the ultimate oneness of God, we have such a varied, complicated, manifold world? So the answer is the Sfirot. The divine Sfirot are in the middle of the process, and they enable multiplicity to come from the One. Vahainu, now line 3. שסיבת התחלקות וריבוי הנבראים, the reason for the division and multiplicity of created things, מהאינסוף, אוי אינסוף ברוך הוא הפשוט, from the simple oneness, it doesn't say the word oneness, but it means that, פשוט means simple oneness, of the infinite, היא לפי שנמשכו על ידי עשר ספירות, is because the process of creation has in the middle the 10 ספירות. כי ספירות הוא מלשון מספר, because, as mentioned, ספירות come from the word number, להיותם בחינות שונות, since there are different aspects, שיפול עליהם המספר, on which you could count. חסד בחינה אחת, kindness, that's one ספירה, that's number one. גבורה בחינה שנית, severity is number two. ולכן נמשך מזה, and therefore there is expressed from this, from this process of the ספירות, ריבוי, multiplicity, והתחלקות, and the division, הנבראים of created things. So in other words, is a way of seeing that just by seeing multiplicity, you see a divine process taking place. You look at a tree with leaves, and the leaves are many, and in fact they're different. Each leaf is different to the other leaf. And where does this differentness and manifoldness come from? It comes from the divine spirit. So you can look at the tree and think of the Sefirot, and see
the tree of life.
You can certainly think of the tree of life as well, right?
Is this then like when you look at white light, it looks pure in one single thing. Shine it through a prism, it splits up into the different colours.
Yeah, now that's a very wonderful image. And you know, it's a wonderful aspect of reality. And it's a very wonderful image about the nature of reality.
Does it, that I think in terms of light means that all the frequencies, all the radiant wavelengths were there in the first place, they were just not revealed separately, the prism does that. So does that mean that godliness as we saying it rather than seeing it, is that it's simple, it's pure, it's single, but it needs the spherot to act like prisms to manifest the different elements in it that are already there?
See, that's a very interesting idea, that through the concealment of the infinite, there's a revelation of something deeper. See, that's what you're suggesting. And that's a very profound concept, because the idea of creation, as it's expressed in a midrash, but which Hasidic thought takes up, that the goal of creation is that there should be a dira lo yitbarach betachtonim, a dwelling for God in the lower world. And that means that through the process of halem, of concealment, and then revelation, something deeper is being revealed than would have been revealed if you just had the pure light of the Ein Sof. So through concealment and the fracturing, as it were, of the light, and the seeing of all the different aspects, and then the further processes of exile and redemption, through that multiplicity and complexity, something very exalted is revealed that wouldn't be revealed otherwise. Yeah. So it's some deep inner revelation.
Later in the principle, I'm trying to visualize whose point of view. Like the godly point of view is beyond the manifestation.
Well, there's the godly point of view as it is in terms of God himself. And there's the godly point of view, or the godly teaching, which is instructing us how to see the universe.
Yeah.
Because these teachings also have a divine source.
Yeah.
So there is the divine teaching us about how to look as human beings at the universe, and also to try to understand how God sees the universe, as it were, or doesn't see the universe. That's You know, that for God, there's only God at one level, that's at a certain level. Yeah, we might get to that distinction a little bit. Now, so we've reached 9...
10.
10, right. Or line 9. V'zeo ki eresh amecha. That's the verse which says, When I see your heavens, ma'aseh etzvotecha, the work of your fingers. Now, what does it mean, fingers? Fingers mean differentiation. Kmo ha'mechalek davar, like dividing something up. O kotev otiyot shonot zu mizu, or writing different letters with your fingers. Shu al yedeya etzvot, which comes about through the fingers writing. Vehena eses svirot, and they are the 10 svirot. Shehein b'mispa eser etzvot, and they have the same number as the 10 fingers. So it is the svirot which, as it were, are writing existence, like the 10 fingers writing a text, and the text is the text of the divine being transformed into a world, into a universe, and into ultimately cities and people and forests and deserts and mountains. Now, however, while one can speak about many aspects of life, the verse itself that we began with, about bringing out the stars by number, is talking about stars. Now, why stars? Okay, so let's just try to keep... let's try to keep track of what's happening, yeah? So first of all right, so existence is concealment, and then we have different levels of revelation. So first of all, we have this root, Samach Peresh, which means number, book, telling, and Sefer. Now, and that relates to the Sfirot. Each of these relate to the divine Sfirot. And they reveal godliness and also bring multiplicity. So they are able to create an authentic world which is multiple, but which is an expression of Ein Sof, the infinite, which is beyond and which is one. Okay, and so now so it's the Sfirot, which are like the fingers, which create, which divide up the world, so that its multiplicity is something which really comes from the divine. So this is teaching a way of seeing. You look at anything, and you can see the
fingers of
that's right, the fingers of heaven. Yeah, the fingers of the divine. Yes, yeah. If Maimonides will forgive the anthropomorphism. But the interesting thing about Maimonides, while he was very worried about anthropomorphism, in his Guide for the Perplexed, Part 1, he goes through every example of anthropomorphism in the Bible, explaining what it means. You know, he doesn't just say, oh, you know, it's all a metaphor, that's the end of it. Each metaphor has a specific meaning. Why is this metaphor? Why is it that metaphor? Because we're grappling with talking about infinite concepts, and that infinite concepts should enter our human minds is a remarkable thing. And that's why I linked it to the Sedra last week, which talks about breaking through the barrier so that the human mind, which you could say you know, is naturally concerned with, you know, food, survival, building something, mating, reproduction, you know, what can it conceive divine things? Yes. Mm. Particularly, in fact, even before that barrier is broken through, the mind can conceive divine things, but it just thinks that the divine things are separate from the physical. The breaking through which happened on Mount Sinai was joining together the physical and the spiritual, and also joining together the human mind and infinite realms beyond. So here we're getting concepts which come from the other side of the veil. So, and enter our thinking. So now we're going to focus on stars. Kochavim.
It's because people asking that this sort of discourse is very conceptual. It engages my thinking mind. In order to find the divine in the multiplicity, it's not the thinking mind that is.
You're right. The key to one's soul.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're different keys, but one important key is the mind. And then by entering the corridors of the mind,
mm-hmm.
and finding this kind of teaching, which illuminates those corridors,
mm-hmm.
that helps one affect the heart. Because moach shalit al halev,
mm-hmm.
the brain, the mind, rules the heart. And then the heart, I mean, it's a process that in Chabad teachings, it describes the way there are
ceremonies. The foundation.
Hmm?
That's the foundation of heart.
Yes. You see, there's cerebral emotions. There is ahava v'yira, love and fear and awe, which are in the mind. But at that moment, they're still cerebral. And then they can be flow, they can flow down into the heart, and they can become intense, heartfelt emotions. Or the process can take a somewhat different route, and through chokhmah, wisdom, which is like the initial illumination, bina, contemplation, and then reaching da'at. Now da'at, knowledge, is like the phrase va'adam. Adam knew Eve, a bonding together. That bonding of the person together with the divine concept means that the daily reality of the person changes. And that's really what the goal is. That the person should become someone who is expressing in their daily activity, which has a multiple quality and involves different elements in it, that there should be an awareness that what is really flowing is a divine flow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in that sense that the person is operating in the world. But you're right, Mika, that the challenge of moving from something that is purely cerebral to something that has vital life meaning for the person is the challenge for the individual taking such concepts and making them part of their lives in a fuller way. And there, the concept not of meditation but of contemplation, hitbonanut is the intermediary where a cerebral concept such as this can be chewed over and explored, and where it becomes something that actually becomes
part of. Is that what we are engaged in now, in Hitbonanut?
In a sense it is. This is like a kind of group Hitbonanut.
Yeah.
Yes. But if it was just individual. One of us, standing in the, it might be in the garden, or a forest.
Oh, wow, that's heaven.
Thinking these ideas.
Yeah.
And like the early Chabad Hasidim would take their talit and tefillin and go into the forest.
Oh, wow,
pray.
That's what I want to do. I just want to live in a forest, seriously.
Well, the trouble with the urban London is
the forest
dwellings are very expensive.
Yeah.
But I'm sure.
It's more like a jungle than a forest, isn't it?
All right.
So where would you put emunah or faith? Or?
That's a beautiful question. I think emunah is the... you see, emunah is something which transcends intellectualizing. Intellectualizing.
Mm.
The cerebral dimension. Emunah is like a bond with the divine which goes beyond everything. But this process of sort of intellectualist thought and contemplation is in order to draw the emunah, to draw the faith down into the reality of the person. Someone once wrote to Rabbi Shneur Zalman, this is around the year 1802 or something like that. They said, your teachings are so subtle and philosophical, you know, that this isn't what the ordinary person needs. So Rabbi Shneur Zalman responded, and he said, the Talmud tells us that the thief about to break in calls to God. Now, what does that mean? You see, the person writing to Rabbi Shneur Zalman said all people need is faith. They don't need these intellectual ideas. So he said, look, the thief about to break in calls to God. You can imagine that. You know, the thief isn't an agnostic. You know, he's
yeah, God help me to break in.
That's right. That's exactly it. And so what's the problem? He believes in God on one level. But the fact that God said, thou shalt not steal, that he ignores. So there's a level of belief and then and a level of ignoring God as well. So that's the inconsistency in human life. And you can find this in oneself in all kinds of ways. So Rabbi Shneur Zalman says the demand is that the pure emunah, this pure faith, should become part of our reality. And he believes that it's through this kind of complex teaching that we're able to take that emunah, that which transcends. You see, the emunah is the point which transcends everything and connects with Ein Sof, the infinite. But to draw that down through the system.
That's really interesting. So emunah is like in this picture, it's like a quality, like a cosmic quality that sort of emanates and one draws it in, rather than something that emerges from within to...
Oh, wow, that's an interesting idea.
Well, there's a beautiful phrase that the Baal Shem Tov used, ha'emunah hi hadvekut.
Yeah.
Emunah is cleaving to God. So it's as if we are connecting with God on an exalted level, and that's the level of emunah, which then flows down into the mind. And the very interesting thing, when it flows down into the mind, see, let me tell you a story from the time of the beginning of Hasidism, which I may have told previously. There was a young man who was very interested in Hasidism. And his father or his father-in-law, I can't remember which, was very opposed to this. But nonetheless, the young man went off and he went to the Magid of Mezrich, the second leader of Hasidism. He stayed there a few months and then he came back. And his father-in-law is very contemptuous. So what did you learn over there with this great rabbi that you spent 6 months with? I learned that God created the world. Ah! So there was a little orphan living in the house who was working as the maid in the house. Rachel, who created the world? God. You see, you didn't learn any more than Rachel, little Rachel, the cleaning the kitchen pan. You know, she also knows that God created. So the young man said, no, no, she believes it, but I know it.
Oh, wow.
So it's that knowledge. You see, there's belief and there's knowledge. Interestingly, the Rambam writes, it is the mitzvah to know that God is the source of all being. Okay. Not just to believe it, but to know it.
So, and, wow.
So it's emunah and to know yediyah?
Yes, leida. He writes leida. Ken. Yes. Yesod ha-yesodot v'amud ha-chochmot, the foundation of all foundations and the pillar of wisdoms, leida, to know sheyesh matzui rishon, that there's a first being which...
So there's a state of beingness that is there.
That's right.
It's beyond question.
That's right. That's godliness. The Matsui Rishon, the first existence, which is the source of all other existence.
Can you translate it to enlightenment in Eastern?
Well, it's Jewish enlightenment, but
the fact
that the human mind has the possibility of at one stage feeling that it's ordinary,
one with the one.
And then a higher stage which breaks through to a higher way of seeing and seeing the divine in everything. So, you know, there's certainly parallels. How far to take the parallel is another question, but there's certainly parallels. Now,
does emunah require effort?
Yes, it can, and that's the interesting thing about emunah, which differs a little bit from the popular way people think about it. Emunah relates to verbs which mean training, practicing, like omanot, art. Emunah is almost like a skill. You learn to see things in a particular way, and that's the way in which you see according to the structure of
Manah. It's also a contract. Manah is a contract.
Right.
Umanut is art.
Yes, so emunah is like a matter of working at something. Whereas it's very often living in a Christian country, you know, but do you have faith? You either have faith or you don't have faith. Emunah is a relationship with God. Faith is a relationship with God, and you work on that relationship. Mm-hmm. And there is a level where you work on a level of understanding, a cerebral level, a rational level, and then reaching beyond the rational to a higher level. But if you reach beyond to a higher level and then you understand that, so you draw that level of emunah into knowledge, and the emunah is there for a higher dimension. So there's always a higher dimension.
But you don't have to go through emunah to get that. You can know something because I'm seeing the tables here. I know it's here. But if you want to start working on yourself and having faith, believing in something, you need to start without knowing it's there, and then you work at it, and maybe the result will be that.
Yeah, well, you see, that knowing that the table is here and a kind of knowledge which comes as a result of chokhmah, bina, and da'at, wisdom, understanding, and knowledge, it's two different kinds of knowledge. Mm. One kind of knowledge is just simply seeing what is apparent around us. And another kind of knowledge is seeing, as it were, all the different levels, all the transparency of everything, and how it crystallizes in a mindset which makes you realize that this is the way to behave. So it's
in the story of the young man who said, "I know there is a God."
Right.
He could get to that knowledge through having studied and learned, but not necessarily through having faith. He didn't have. Did he have to start off with emunah?
Well, I think what he had to do is start by understanding, you know, what faith can do, and then how to develop faith, how to nurture faith. You see, chokhmah, wisdom, in this process of wisdom, understanding and knowledge, which it describes here as these three books, which are the foundation of everything. So wisdom is like the step beyond. Wisdom is like the lightning flash of illumination. And then taking that lightning flash and exploring what it reveals is bina, is understanding, like hitbonunu. And from that ultimately comes da'at, so comes knowledge. So the wisdom comes from the realm beyond, the realm beyond, the Ein Sof, the infinite. And there's like a lightning flash coming down, which you then take as a kernel, as a seed, which you develop through the process of Bina, and then that becomes Da'at and life. All right, so now we go back, or we'll go to the stars. We mentioned the stars up to now, but now we're going to be mitbonen on the stars. We're going to contemplate stars. Stars as distinct from sun and from moon. So that's line 13 on page Zayin. V'hatam she'inyan zeh nizkar, the reason why this idea of counting is mentioned b'pasuk in a verse b'nogeh l'kochavim dafka, specifically about stars, yesh lomar, one can suggest, al pi maima ha-midrash, according to what the midrash says, l'man nimshelu b'kochavim, why are the Jewish people compared to stars? V'lo b'chama v'lo b'alvana, they're not compared to the sun or the moon. And then it explains, le'atid lavo, in the future, ha'chama v'alvana boshim, the sun and the moon will be ashamed, v'ha'kochavim einam boshim, and the stars are not ashamed. Now, so there are verses about it quotes it here in the line 67 on the left hand side. Kakatuv v'chofra halvana uvosha hachama ki malach Hashem tzvakot b'hatzion uvirushalayim. The moon will be, its face will be hidden, and the sun will be ashamed because God will rule in Jerusalem.
It's poetic.
Okay. So, but let's see what the meaning is of the poetry.
Okay.
So why are the sun and moon ashamed, whereas the stars are not ashamed? Now let's see. We're going to learn a good lesson in life. V'hainu inyan, v'hainu lefi, and this is because shehakochavim nirim ktanim biyoter, because the stars appear very small. That's what Jacob said. I am, because of all the kindness that you've given me, God, I feel very small. The person who is closer to the divine, who yoter kalo chashiv, feels more and more humble. Now that is seen as a very important spiritual response. Nice. That through coming closer to holiness, the person becomes more and more kalot, like nothing, becomes more and more humble. And that's the image of the stars, which are look tiny, expressing the virtue of humility. V'zeu shakovim she'im rakiat mina'a. The stars, when we look at the system of firmaments, of spheres, they're in the eighth sphere, Shehu Bina, which is the sphere of Bina, of understanding, Almad Itkasya, the hidden realm. Now, what is special about the hidden realm? You see, we have the hidden realm and we have the divine realm. We have the hidden realm, the revealed realm, and then this world. It's like three levels. The hidden, the revealed, and then this world. So the hidden and the revealed are two spiritual states.
What's the Hebrew?
It's Aramaic. Alma d'itkasya, alma d'itgalya,
yeah.
And olam hazeh.
Okay.
So maybe one day we'll have a political party in Israel. Alma d'itkasya. So, now the point about the hidden world, Shisham lemala yesh ulemata ayin. The perspective in the hidden world is that above is reality. That's where things exist. And below, in our physical domain, is like nothing. It's like something you have to try to understand or contemplate. It's not obvious. But what's really obvious is the spiritual dimension. That's the hidden world. Lechenim ktanim. And therefore the stars are very small, because they are let's just see if he gives anything useful in the it says they feel their own humility because they are part of this hidden realm. They feel their humility and they're small. Ma she'ein kein chama levana, whereas the sun and the moon nirim gdolim, which look big. U'mizeh nimshach liyot nireh lemata hayesh ulemayla ayin. And from this you get the idea that what is below is real, and what's above doesn't really exist, or it's ayin, it's nothingness. You have to think, do you believe in it? So it's two different ways of looking, like you were talking about whose perspective.
Yeah.
You see, so there's one perspective that above is reality and below is in some sense imaginary, and the other perspective, the below is real. Mm. What's real? Is the table real or is God real? V'lachein, line 4, and therefore la'atid lavo, in the future, kasher v'nigla kvod Hashem, when the glory of God will be revealed, azai then hachama v'halvana, the sun and the moon, boshim, are ashamed, kevan shemehem nishtalshel hayesh, because it's through them that it comes down, it chains downwards. The idea of feeling one's own significance, the ego, v'dava nifrad, being something separate, that whole sense of self, that pride and egotism and narcissism, comes down from the sun and the moon. So here it's explaining the poem. Mm-hmm. That it's the very reality and, as it were, material presence of the sun and the moon, which brings about a sense of material presence in the heart of a person. Whereas the stars, which are tiny, and they express something much more spiritual about the individual. And so being linked to the stars is something which is beyond ma she'ein kein ha-kochavim. Whereas with the stars, it's different. And that's why also the end of that verse about counting the stars. With great power, not one star is missing. When in the stars, there's the concept of number. As it says, God gives a number to the stars. Which is because of the importance of the stars. Coming back to the image of the grain, the counting the wheat. And therefore not one is missing. Not one of the stars is missing. All of them exist. And they are there at the exalted heights of the world. From the 6 days of creation. V'hainu, and that means shemitzad ha-cheshivut shelehem, because of their importance. Nitam behem gam atokef, they are also given the power, shiyuka yamim, that they should exist, not just the genus, but each individual, be'ish. Va'al derech mayim rabbeinu zal, and as the sages spoke about, et shedako limnot hu davar chashuv ve'einu batel. There's a discussion among the sages about things, there are things that you buy, and you buy them by number, like when you buy eggs. You buy a dozen eggs. It's like a number that you buy. If you buy nuts, you buy almonds, you might say a half a kilo of almonds. Or you might say, give me 20 almonds. You know, so it could be that you count them. But eggs, you always count them. So the more that the thing is specifically counted, the more significant it is. And so therefore the attribution to the stars that they're counting is expressing this spiritual significance. Now, what I think we've got a few more minutes. What we're going to try to do now, what the discourse tries to do now, is to put together things which have numbers with that which is beyond number. And it does that in an interesting way, as hopefully we'll see in a moment, quoting the Shla. So let's see this in section Dalet. V'mamshech b'mayma. Now it continues in the discourse. We have to understand what it says above. That the idea of counting something is significant, it's important. Because the person called Rabbi Yeshaya Halevi Horovitz, who wrote a book called Shnei Luchot HaBrit, Two Tablets of the Covenant, which is shortened to the word Shla. He asked the question, about what the sages said, this